You're listening to All the Best. I'm Georgia Moody, and we have a very special story for you this week, just in time for Christmas. For many of us, this time of year is very special, spending time with family and friends, exchanging gifts, eating more than we should. But there are people who dread the thought of Christmas. It can be the loneliest time of year. You're about to hear a story about a very unlikely pair of people, a nun and an ex-crim who have worked to do something about that loneliness. You'll see just how unusual their teamwork is. It's a bit of a miracle in itself. Kate Montague brings you this story. It's called The Scallywag and the Saint.
When I met Marie, I thought she was a cranky, short-tempered woman. But she was a nun, and I've always learnt you've got to have respect for nuns. You know, they're godly creatures.
Vic came over and, you know, it went all right. He thought I was this cranky, horrible person. nothing's changed.
Sister Marie and Vic are an unlikely duo. Looking at Marie, you wouldn't know she's a nun. She's a short lady in her 60s, has soft features and wears practical clothes. Vic is around the same age. He's about 6 foot tall, a keen smoker, and when we met, he was wearing a black t-shirt, baseball cap and jeans.
Well, I'd just come out of rehab for drug abuse, and a psychologist there had suggested I do some community work. And I thought, well, what a splendid idea. I tried to do some volunteer work with Oz Harvest. They didn't want me because I had a criminal record. I was not good enough to wash their dishes and clean up because I was a scallywag. I was venting to my psychologist about it. And she said, I just happen to know a little old nun over in Petersham who would love to have you help her.
She rang me and said she had a client who wanted to do some community service, but he hadn't had any luck because he'd had a criminal record. So she asked if I would give him a chance. Well, I have to be a bit careful. I said, well, is he violent? Has he got any record of violence? And she said, no. And has he had any, has he assaulted women? And she said, no. So I said, well, look, I'll give him a go. You know, we can just try it out, see how it goes.
And she made the introductions. I came over, met Marie, and the rest is history. That was four and a half, 5 years ago. That's how we've got the saint and the sinner working together.
Vic and Sister Marie have obvious differences, but for the last 5 years, they've worked side by side on the Christmas Project. Sister Marie began the Christmas Project almost 20 years ago. She wanted to reach out to people with mental health issues who were living in boarding houses and hostels. Sister Marie had done this kind of work for years, but one day she came across something that was particularly disturbing.
A boarding house inspired me. It would inspire nightmares, probably. At the end of 1994, I was president of a St. Vincent de Paul Committee for the Care of People with Mental Illness, and we had taken as one of our goals to assist people in boarding houses. We had some Christmas presents left over, and I remembered hearing there was a boarding house in Stanmore, and I looked it up in the phone book and found out where it was, and I just went over there with the presents. And I couldn't see any front door, really, so I went down the side and went in a side gate to the backyard. And I thought I had, I don't know, died and gone to hell or walked into Dickens or something. I'd never seen anything like it. It was this group of quite elderly people, some with one leg, some staggering around with severe disabilities, shaking all over. People sitting around a backyard under these old trees. There was a wooden table in the middle that had the remains of lunch, which was stone-hard bits of bread from sandwiches. They were dressed in the most ragged clothing, filthy, with cigarette burns. I never seen anything like it. I didn't know that people were living like that, and this was in Stanmore, which has always been a fairly upmarket suburb.
That day was the start of something. Sister Marie became a fierce advocate for the rights of residents living in boarding houses. She was hugely influential in the passing of legislation in October this year that will regulate boarding houses and protect residents against things like abuse, neglect and exploitation. But Marie still has concerns.
The big thing still is that most of their money, their disability pension, goes on rent and board. It's a worry because it means that these people are condemned to continuous indigence. They'll always be poor, extremely poor. When you go into the places, the thing that gets you is that these are 60-year-old, 50-year-old, whatever, 70-year-old people, and their entire life's belongings fit into one shared room, one half wardrobe, one small cupboard. And there are no personal things like photographs. Their lives are so impoverished by just sheer poverty, but lack of contact with the outside world, lack of contact with family or friends, lack of a social life. It's terrible.
The Christmas Project focuses on these forgotten people in the community. Each year, Sister Marie, Vic and other volunteers write Christmas cards that are sent to people who would otherwise receive not one personal letter. Each person also receives a gift package, and the boarding houses are given a hamper of festive foods. But over the last few years, their client base has begun to reach beyond just those in the boarding houses.
The thing that we're picking up through the Christmas Project, the fact that people would move from boarding houses to aged care, and they were poor and friendless in boarding houses, and nothing changed when they went to aged care. They were still poor and friendless. One place just said, none of our people have anyone. And we've got 72 names. And then, oh, do you just want the most desperate ones, or can you do others?
There was one bloke up at Woi Woi we delivered a hamper to. The lady said, oh, there's one of them, that's John or whatever his name was, sitting over there. He sits there every day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, waiting for his visitors that never come. You know, it almost brings a tear to my eye now thinking about that. Every day he sat there. How sad's that?
When Vic came to Sister Marie 5 years ago, he thought he'd do a few days volunteer work and then move on. But something about what they are doing has kept him there.
She does a lot. She's a saint. And if you need to perform a miracle for a saint, I'm her miracle. I'm living proof. If someone said to me a couple of years ago, I'll be doing volunteer work 5 days a week, I'd have said, get stuffed. Wake up to yourself. And actually looking forward to it, so. I was in court again, facing going back to jail, I don't know, for about the fourth or fifth time. And I just thought, I've got to stop this. I've got to, you know. And someone suggested I go to rehab, but that was at the age of 55, 54. And go to rehab full of young people, you know, like. And I did. And the penny dropped, and there's been no turning back. It's just been one good thing after another. It's the best thing I ever did, you know. I could recommend it to any drug user. Get a bit of rehab in here. 2 packets of lollies in this bag. A shampoo. Shaving cream. My role is general dog's body.
Deodorant.
The gopher. I organise the packing part of it and the delivery and that sort of thing and the logistics of it. It's a bit hard, but it's okay. You've seen the conditions there, really cramped conditions, but we survive. I call it the dungeon downstairs under Marie's house. It's tiny. It's got that damp smell to it, but it works.
I just noticed we need 4 18s, and I'm not sure how many I bought.
We've got 18 slots.
Yeah, but some of them are those trashy ones. I mean the good ones.
Look, I'm not a woman, I don't know, but they look fine to me, but if I was a woman, I'd be able to tell you. But I'm not. They're just undies are undies to me. So we're both totally different people, but we seem to click.
And then when I do that,
she's got a different way of doing things than me. I've got to remind myself sometimes that she's the boss. And that hurts, you know, because I think her management skills possibly leave a lot to be desired, you know.
I'm not prepared to give scungy stuff to people who might need decent things. He would like me to simply hand over everything to him. Sometimes I have to slow him down because, you know, I think men sometimes can just get on into a big routine and it all just starts to become a bit quick. I know, because I bought the big ones, it'd be okay, because I bought the big size.
We both might have the same goals to get to point A, but she might go through A, B and C, I'll just go directly to A, you know, or D or whatever you want to call it. And she does fuss a lot, but that's, my God, you know, that's what she does. She's a fussy old nun, you know, but she's a lover. Yeah, she's a funny character.
I was looking at some of the underwear. Now, not that I'm a prude, but they're for size 22, and they were high cut and very flimsy, and I thought, oh, that's really weird. My imagination doesn't really want to go there. So I decided we need to go and get some
real
more.
Real women have curves.
Yeah, I know, but that would be revolting. It's not just having curves. When you're around size 22, 24, 26 and 28 and 30, I think you need decent underwear. Not frilly little things. They're not exactly going to go. So I thought it was time to hit the shops.
She's had a lot of time doing this on her own. And she finds it very hard to hand it over to other people. You know, she's got to have that control. And she's been doing it for so many years on her own. It would be hard to give responsibility away to someone else. But, yeah, I'm learning to live with that.
I have no idea what's going on. Every year it defeats me. I give up.
She won't hand it over.
No.
She won't hand it over. She's
good. Well, as you saw with the underwear, it's probably a good thing. A woman needs to look at some of these things and say, no. Don't think so.
Well, I must admit, I just thought underwear.
Yeah, underwear. That's right. Well, yeah, it's not really. I just get these mental images.
No, now that you've said that, so have I.
Yeah, size 24 women in little frilly, flimsy underwear, I don't think so.
Sounds exciting.
It sounds absolutely fascinating to me. The stuff of nightmares.
Despite their differences, I could see that Vic and Sister Marie had a little bit in common. I was curious about whether or not spirituality played a part in the work they did. But when I asked Sister Marie about why she became a nun and where it all began, she was pretty quick to remind me that she was no stereotype.
Oh, come on. Listen, this stuff is old. It's ancient history. I was 17, and I look at 17-year-olds now and I think, oh, God, brain damage. What possessed you? No accounting for the altruism of youth and the idealism of youth. I did have a very deep prayer life, so, you know, there was a lot of faith dimension to that, which hasn't changed, so that's that. It probably was for me the right decision, though I wasn't old enough or strong enough to fight the institution as well as I should have at the time, or to survive the institution, let's say. Because religious life, you wouldn't want to know, but religious life in the 1950s and 60s was very rigid, and there possibly wasn't a place for anyone with an independent mind, and possibly people woke up to the fact that I had an independent mind, so I had a rather rough journey. So I suppose that's the reality, and that's still the reality. But it's never been terribly conventional, which is fine. I've never had any great burning desire to be conventional.
I wanted to ask Vic about where he was at with God, but I skirted around the question for a while. But true to form, Vic just cut to the chase.
Look, I'm a Christian, right? I'm a born-again Christian. I found my faith just only like about 18 months ago, but I got kidnapped and I got taken to church. I did. My word, I did.
Who kidnapped you and took you to church?
Oh, I met these two women at a coffee shop in Stanley Street, Darlinghurst. And they said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm going home. What do you got to do at home? Nothing. Well, why are you going home? Do you want to come to church? I said, no, I don't. F church, you know. Oh, no. Well, you might as well come. You can always walk out. And I went. And then I went back. I had a spiritual experience.
Did you?
Yes.
Can you tell me? I'm interested in that. You don't want to tell me about your spiritual experience?
I don't know. Something happened. Maybe I was touched by the Holy Spirit. Maybe I was... I don't know. Something happened. And I'm not the best. I'm not the best Christian in the world, but I'm trying. So let's leave that one there.
What does Marie think about you?
I said, I don't think she cares. Yeah. I mean, she cares, but I mean, she doesn't Bible bash me or anything like that.
I continued this conversation when Vic and I went for a drive one afternoon. I was interested in what other people in the community thought of he and Marie teaming up. Do people
ever comment? Yeah, they think I'm a priest. Marie and I go to a lot of functions together. She invites me to functions with her. I've been asked a couple of times whether I'm a priest. People have thought I was a priest. I look like a priest. I think that's funny.
All this sounded like such a huge departure from Vic's old life, before he met Sister Marie and started work on the Christmas project. It struck me just how much must have changed for him over the last years.
Getting back to grassroots, every time I walk through the city now and see people sitting on corners begging and those homeless people, I know that they're not well. I used to look at them before with disgust. You know, now I look at them with a sense of caring. I understand now that they do have mental issues, and it's a problem. I used to be a racist because I was brought up to be a racist in my age, you know, that's just the way it was when I was a kid. I was brought up in that environment, and it's only recently in the last 8 or 9 years that it's been a gradual thing where I've got much more empathy for other people, other nationalities and people's plights. Like I've...
What is it that's changed?
Sister Marie, her attitude about everything has rubbed off on me. Just seeing how these people live and knowing that I can make a little bit of difference. Not much, but just a little bit.
I don't know that altruism is greatly prized in our society. Do we think of people who don't have any responsibility for them, but they are part of our community and they are just languishing in nursing homes or hostels? And they would love someone to visit. I actually think there's something going on there, though. I think it's fear of our own mortality, because nursing homes are scary places. Because I think, how would I cope with ending up in here? You've got to face that. It's a real fear. But still, if you can overcome fear enough to say, well, look, it would do something great for some other person, be nice.
Look, I've been a scallywag and a scoundrel all my life. You know, I've been taking. You know, if I met you, I'd rob you. You know, I was a junkie. I spent 30 years in the wilderness, and I was not a very nice person. You know, and that's being honest with you and being honest with myself. And it's good to give back. It's good to change, to reverse it. I think I'm a good person. I'm one of the good guys now, and that's the way I like it.
That was Sister Marie Harris and Vic Hitchcock speaking with All the Best Kate Montague. You can see photos of them on our website, and you'll also find a link to more information about their Christmas project and several other projects that Sister Marie runs. That's allthebestradio.com. As you know, All the Best is a storytelling radio program. Stories are our stock in trade. Joining you now is someone who also deals in stories, but in a slightly different way. She's doing her PhD as part of an oral history project documenting about 7 decades of Australian stories. Her name is Nicole Kirby. Thanks for coming on All the Best.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the oral history project you're working on.
Well, it's called Australian Generations Oral History Project, and we're recording 300 life history stories from across Australia. So that means we're getting people, like you said, from 7 generations, people born between the 1920s and the 1990s, to come forward and tell their life story. Myself and a team of other interviewers are interviewing them. We're spending about 2 days with people, so about a few hours each day, and they tell the story of their life. The stories will go in the National Library catalogue, so they'll be there for all eternity for people to come back and listen to. And we'll also be using them with Radio National to make a series of history documentaries. I guess one of the big ideas with this kind of history is writing ordinary people back into history. So much historical evidence that we've got comes from newspapers and written sources, parliamentary statutes and all that kind of thing. It's a big picture history. It's the famous people of history that we hear most about, but also the ordinary lives that people have, the little loves, losses, the everyday things that they do is just as important in my eyes in telling the story of what it means to kind of have lived in Australia for the last century or so. So that's what we're trying to capture in this project.
So for those who are unfamiliar with it, what's oral history?
Oral history is, I guess, the practice of, storytelling, of having a conversation and recording it. I guess oral history came about in the 1970s when there was this idea of history from below, getting the unheard voices written back into history, recording people's stories that we might otherwise be lost. When I do an oral history interview, I generally ask a person to tell their life story from the start in whatever way they can. And I guess when you look back over life, memory is really shapes how you perceive your past. And so oral history is about sort of capturing not only what happened in the past at an individual level, but also the way of kind of looking back and remembering that, the way we create meaning in the past, and the relationship between the past and the present is a really important part of this kind of history.
Mm. And so what kind of stories is the Australian Generations Oral History Project looking for?
We're looking for all kinds of stories. Pretty much anyone who is an Australian person or lives in Australia at the moment and has a story that they want to tell is welcome to come forward. So far we've had all kinds of stories, and we're looking for more of those kind of stories, especially people born in the 70s and 80s, and particularly men and also blue-collar workers. We've had a lot of well-educated people who are happy to talk about their lives, but they're some of the gaps that we want to fill in at the moment. So people who haven't been to university and young people as well, and men, because they're the gaps. So if anyone listening to this would be interested in telling their story or being interviewed over a couple of days, I'd urge you to come forward and tell your story.
So here in All the Best, where you feature personal stories and you also deal with personal stories in oral history, can personal stories change our understanding of history?
Yeah, of course they can. Yeah, definitely. And I think probably the thing that got me interested most in this kind of history was those personal stories are always what I find most alluring about history, I guess. I think it's really easy to see the big picture of history, but what happens kind of on the ground is really important. So, yeah, I guess from some of the interviews that I've done, just the stories of individual people sort of trying to make a life and kind of trying to struggle forward in whatever way they can at the time has been fascinating, really fascinating stories to record. So one woman that I recorded down here in Melbourne was an elderly Aboriginal lady who through her childhood constantly moved and never spent more than about 2 weeks in a place until she was 13, I think. She attended dozens of schools and, went from relative to relative, and basically she was on the run from the Aboriginal Protection Board, because if they found her, she'd be taken to a home. So I guess the, you know, policies towards Aboriginal people have changed a lot in our history, and there's something that we know about. But when you hear a personal story like that, and how it shaped her life, those stories kind of take on a really personal meaning as well.
Mm. So stories like hers would help you understand not just kind of the administrative history of how Aboriginal people were managed and dealt with by the state. This is kind of the real impact on one person.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
When can people start seeing the results of the project?
Towards the end of next year, we'll start having some programs ready on Hindsight. So, yeah, keep your ears out for the Australian Generation series.
And if you fit the demographic that Australian Generations is looking for, if you're a man, a young man, or a blue-collared worker, or all three, get in contact, look up the Australian Generations project. Nicole, thanks for coming in and speaking to us, and all the best.
It's a pleasure. Thanks very much.
And you can go to our website, allthebestradio.com, to find out how to get in touch. While you're online, you can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at @allthebest. That's it for the show. From all of us here at All The Best, we wish you a safe and happy Christmas. All The Best is produced at FBI Radio Sydney in association with SYN in Melbourne. Our show is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Today's show was produced by Kate Montague and me, Georgia Moody. Our features executive producer is Belinda Lopez. Our production manager is Carly-Ann Keneally. And our executive producers are Jordana Caputo and Eliza Salos. I'm Georgia Moody. See you next week.